welcome to the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Joe. Hi, hello. Before we dive into today's episode, wanted to invite y'all to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you do your listening. Those reviews really help push the show out to other people who might enjoy our book recommendations and author interviews just like you. You can follow us on social media or on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds. And you can send an email to us, professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. With that, I've got Emma here with me today.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
If you haven't heard, I'm a little under the weather. So my voice has a slight rasp to it, but all in all, I'm good. I'm happy to be here. How are you?
Doing well. Excited for this topic, I think, and hope we have some interesting and fun things to say.
You know, I hope so too. So listeners, you probably know it from the title, but today we are going to talk about some new classics. What are the books that we think everyone should be reading? I want to start with kind of like some of the boring or the background to kind of lay out the groundwork. I have some info here from tckpublishing.com and the New York Times, specifically their article, Who Gets to Decide What Belongs in the Canon? But thank you to both of them. And there's some sourcing there for you from what I'm pulling out. But overall, the canon is a list of most influential or definitive works of art, literature, music, and philosophy. That's kind of like the broad scale. So basically, it's just this kind of societal list of what movies you should have seen, what music you've likely listened to, art you should recognize, like you think of the Mona Lisa. And in our case today that we're talking about, the books you should have read. Now, we typically see the literary canon exist in school settings, and to have a book be a part of the canon, it usually means there's an element of timelessness, in some instances, especially with more recent works, or contains truths that withstand the test of time, which is usually how they translate into curriculum. Usually books that take place during one of the world wars align with that same timeline in your history class. And so like teachers are playing off of each other. And now, of course, there is no governing body or specific person who determines what's in the canon. A lot of times it tends to come from scholars or critics with the idea that learning so much of this would make a well-rounded person, air quotes on well-rounded. Emma, I wanted to ask you, do you have thoughts on what this means and how do you feel about the canon as a whole?
You have thoughts.
Because we've talked about how we feel about like the classics. So that's the other thing I should put in here before, you know, I ask you a question, then don't let you talk. The other thing I should lay in here is we have mentioned the classics, the things that you expect to see. And I'll give a list of some of them in a minute here. But like classics, canon titles, how do you feel about this?
So in the few episodes we've done where we've touched on classics, I don't know that I've been shy in saying that I am not a huge fan of classic literature. And I think part of that is perhaps because of my fields of study.
Yeah.
So I think this is a pretty common route to take where you take all of the AP classes in high school and then I was an English literature undergrad. So I took all the literature classes in college and then I went on and did a master's in English lit as well. So I think part of it was that I really despised being told what to read, even though that was the whole point.
Totally.
Of going to school for those things. And that really meant that because I had so much required reading, a lot of my personal fun time reading went totally out the window until that was done.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's hard for me to separate the classics from school and that time. I don't choose to read classics now in my personal like pleasure reading. And so I think what I hope we're offering in this then is a little bit of a reimagining of what we mean by the classics, because I do think a lot of things that we talk about are of old, and not a ton of them are not necessarily of new, brand new, but of the sort of 80s, 90s, 2000s, and even more modern. And so some of these choices, I'm cheating by looking at our notes, are more modern, relatively speaking, to like the Odyssey and the Canterbury Tales. And so I'm excited for our reasons on why we picked some of these with all of that said. But Joe, like, tell me about your thoughts on the classics. I know you've also not been shy when we've talked about them previously.
I have definitely not been shy when we've talked about them previously. Emma, much like you, I have an English lit major for my undergrad, as well as marketing, but that's a different story. But so I did have to sit through two different semesters of British literature and American lit, and I definitely have, we'll call it out, we both have some resentments of assigned reading. But I think one of the things that sticks with me a lot, especially when we look at the canon and what this means, is that one of the books on the list is The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And you cannot tell me that the portrayal from that book, done by like a white man in a white linen suit, is fully accurate to what we expect from stories passed down from enslaved people who were in these positions. I just think that in a lot of instances, the canon does not accurately represent the strides that we have made as a culture, but it also doesn't seem to open up enough room for discourse overall. I think like it's one thing if you and I are saying we're adding to this canon. It's another thing if we're saying like, this book may be a better pick than that, or this book may be more suited to our modern sensibilities. Like, this is going to make us think in the same way and it has the same tie-in, but what can Pride and Prejudice offer me that a similar contemporary romance? I think, like, if we're not talking about curriculum, because you and I aren't talking about curriculum, we're talking about, like, what makes us think as humans, I think we could be a little more discerning and bringing some titles into the mix from 80s, 90s, early 2000s would help us out. So a lot of times I think the canon is tired. I think it is exclusionary to folks who may not feel about reading the way that we feel about reading, or may not have the ability to set aside the time to read all of the Canterbury Tales. You know, like, I think there are some things that could be a little more level set, a little less ivory tower, and a little more what enhances the human experience out of this.
Yeah, and I think that you bring up an interesting point, because I think where I lean towards would be particularly around, right, providing that additional context. So if you are going to read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, adding that additional layer, like, who is this story being told, you know, from the perspective of, talk about the author, talk about it in the historical context, companion it with other things. And I mean, that's particular. I think you could do that, though, in your own, you know, life studies. I don't pretend to know how to teach these things in a classroom. But I think what we see here, you know, is just wanting to broaden and wanting to look at the way these materials are taught in a different way. And so I think there is, as much as I hate to say it, some beauty to Pride and Prejudice and those things. But I would definitely want it to be in context of perhaps something more modern, or have that sort of contrast side by side, or give options for yourself to read, you know, a romance or things from more than one perspective. So you're reading it from Jane Austen's perspective in the 1800s or whatever, and then you're reading something that's more contemporary. And I think it's just about thinking of that in a in a way in which I don't know we've done.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Instead of it being like just this ever growing list of you should read all of these books before you die, it needs to become like a, like I look at Pride and Prejudice specifically, Frankenstein, 1984, and I think there are some titles in there that parallel with items on our list or kind of like lay the foundation for some of the books on our list of like, if you are a horror reader, yeah, it would be helpful to have Frankenstein in your back pocket of like, this was of the time, this kind of important fixture. What pairs to that today, you know? Or Frankenstein's a quick read. So, you know, not the work that's like a great place to go. I want to start with Frankenstein, but then I want to try some modern horror. And then I want to pull something from the 70s and compare it to something now. So I think treating this a little more like a, you know, like even 1984, like where did dystopians start to shake out a little bit? So I think there's a bit of choose your own adventure to this, but I think it's also a great call out point of when do we need to swap out books? When do we need to represent more inclusive voices here, or just more updated knowledge of what we've learned compared to what was available then? Because that's the other thing, as a society, we are growing and learning more. So it's one thing to compare the availability then versus now too.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think for us, well, I won't speak for you, but I think you'll agree. So tell me if you do at the end. But I think our whole thing here that we talk about a lot at Pro Book Nerds is that there's a book for every reader. And so there's absolutely something to be said for all of the classics, whether that's, you know, Macbeth or To Kill a Mockingbird, which I love, by the way, or Great Gatsby or whatever. And you just, there will be books for you as a reader, and then there will be books that you don't like, you can appreciate but don't enjoy. And so I think what we're getting at here is that we just want everyone to broaden horizons, whatever that may be, because there is certainly something to be said about having read, you know, Frankenstein and being able to talk about it and see the influences of that story in modern horror or things like that. But I just think that the whole sort of pressure, I felt this a lot as a high schooler, that you have to read all of these things in order to be well read, and you can't talk about books and literature if you have not read A, B, C, D, all of these classics. I think we're taking that mentality as well and throwing that sort of notion out the window. Read what you want, the classics or not.
I couldn't agree more, Emma. You can absolutely speak for me in that one. Because you're right. I think my goal when I came up with this idea was just to level the playing field yet again. Like, I was with you. I always felt that pressure. And I hate the idea of someone thinking that if they want to become a real reader, and air quotes again, I know you can't see me, but if they want to be a real reader, they have to have read all of these things. I don't buy into that at all. I think today we are bringing you books, you know, now that we're 15 minutes in, I think we are bringing you books that fit the brief of these could absolutely be added to the canon and I would not be surprised. But I think they are also an amazing way to take a step back and go like, oh, that is one of my favorite books, or I loved that. And then you're just kind of seeing across the board that like, this all plays together. Reading is for everyone. You have to go about it the way that makes you happy. And before we dive into our first books, I know we've jumped around the list a little bit, but some of the books that I just like briefly snagged that are considered a part of the canon that you may have read, you may not have, but you probably know the gist of: The Odyssey, The Canterbury Tales, Macbeth, Pride and Prejudice, Frankenstein, The Scarlet Letter, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, The Great Gatsby, 1984, To Kill a Mockingbird, and Beloved. Some of these may be your favorite books. I know one of my all-time favorite books is on that list. But also, there are so many great books out there. Read what you want to read. There are no rules other than make sure you're happy with what you're reading. Soapbox dismounted. I hope you can enjoy this episode where we grabbed some of our, you know, like most impactful reads over the last few years. and books that I would not be surprised would be being taught in high school and college going forward. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I'm happy to do my first pick.
Kick us off, Emma.
Because I was actually taught this in college. So I will give credit to my professor for this one, because this is one of the books that has stuck with me. Even, I don't want to say the actual time period, but along many, many years later from when I was taught this. And my first pick on the list is Atonement by Ian McEwan. This was originally published in 2001. So it is already 23 years old. I don't know how old a book needs to be a classic, but I feel like that counts. Atonement, if you haven't seen the film or have not read about this book, does follow a interesting cast of characters. Sorry, that took my brain too long to process. It starts in 1935 and it follows Bryony. She's 13 and she sort of witnesses an encounter with her older sister, Cecilia, and a boy named Robbie. And because she's a child, 13 is a child, she doesn't quite understand everything that happens and ends up making an accusation that changes everybody's lives, not necessarily for the better. And so the story sort of flashes back and forth in time, which I also love. It goes to 1935, where the incident occurred. It goes to World War II in England and France, and then it flashes forward to present day England, which at that time is like 2001. So I love this story for many reasons. I can't really articulate to you why without ruining things from the book, but what I will say is it reads incredibly well in terms of plot, in terms of character growth and or lack thereof. And if you haven't read this book, but you're looking for something that is in that historical realm, is in that, you know, literary scope, I do get intimidated by things that are literary fiction because I'm a genre reader. And so sometimes I'm like, ugh, I can't read that. I don't read literature anymore. But I think this is a good book to go with because it's compelling. It has family drama. It has romance. It has World War II. It has a bunch of different things in it that I think make it compelling to readers of certain genres. But Ian McEwan's Atonement, I just feel like this would be on a list of sort of new classics, new. I don't know what we're using, you know, in the last 20 plus years of books that have been out. I think this would just be one that would complement teaching. I mean, I enjoyed being taught this book in college. And I'm like, nerd alert, I wrote a paper on this and submitted it to the English Honor Society convention and presented on that in New Orleans my senior year of college. So I am quite a big fan of this story for many things. The point of views, the characters. If you've seen the movie, you know, Keira Knightley and James McAvoy, like it's, I feel like it has its place in history, and I would recommend. So that's my first pick.
I think that's a great place to kick us off from. And I think it also speaks to that a lot of times what ends up in the canon is a bit, not so much slice of life, but day in the life and historical fiction adjacent. You're almost always seeing those like strict literature genre titles. Because I think a fair amount of mine fall into that. My first pick as well, but also no surprise. There's magical realism listed in the genres as well. Surprise to no one coming from me, but my first book is The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Juno Diaz. Things have never been easy for Oscar, a sweet but disastrously overweight, lovesick Dominican nerd. From his home in New Jersey, where he lives with his old world mother and rebellious sister, Oscar dreams of becoming the Dominican J.R.R. Tolkien, and most of all, finding love. but he may never get what he wants, thanks to the Fuku, the curse that has haunted Oscar's family for generations, dooming them to prison, torture, tragic accidents, and above all, ill-starred love. Oscar, still waiting for his first kiss, is just its most recent victim. So Diaz kind of takes us through Oscar's tumultuous life, the history of the family at large, and it's got like this genuine warmth, dazzling energy, humor, insight. It looks at the Dominican American experience and ultimately the endless human capacity to persevere in the face of heartbreak and loss. Number one, I would not be surprised to see this on a reading list. I think taking perspective of kind of like blended culture, having that born in the Dominican Republic and coming to America and having that New Jersey experience, I think there's just so much there that this lends a specific, I don't know, credence that I could just see being used as specific perspective in an English class to look and go like, hey, how does this, you know, how does this match your experience? Or I think it offers a lot. It won a Pulitzer Prize. Like, it's a coming of age story. I think coming of age also does really well for this. I mean, I think of Catcher in the Rye as well. So there's just some, this to me feels like an update or a great placeholder from similar books in the canon that this could take the place of and just offer different perspective and a more modern take on what we're trying to like show kids and that compassion. So yeah, that is The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point that a lot of the stories we see on classic lists do focus on that coming of age or what it was like to come of age in a certain time. And so I love that you've chosen this as a more modern take on those same themes.
My hope is that there is a kid out there who can relate more to this than they could to Holden Caulfield and that the balance is there. Absolutely. I mean, your face says it all. What kid today is relating to Holden Caulfield? But
I mean, right. I feel like you either love or hate Catcher in the Rye. I didn't hate Catcher in the Rye, but I didn't love it.
Same. Didn't hate it. So. And in case I didn't say it, originally came out in September of 2007. So again, not quite as far back as 2001, but still pretty far back there, all things considered.
Yeah, and I think that that's a perfect segue to my next pick. And this is honestly because I do feel like when we have assigned reading, I always immediately go, well, this isn't fun. So this was my hope with this one a little bit. That it would maybe be fun to read. And so my next pick is The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins, the first book for the trilogy, you can choose. This came out in 2008. I don't really think I need to go too in-depth. If you want to hear us go in-depth, we have a whole Hunger Games retrospective that we can link in the show notes.
Yeah, there are three episodes for you to check out.
Yeah, so we won't go too in-depth there. But for those of you that need a reminder or have never heard of The Hunger Games, here we have a dystopian North America where we have the nation of Pan Am. It's a shiny capital surrounded by 12 outlying districts. The capital keeps the districts in line by forcing them all to send one boy and one girl between the ages of 12 and 18. Let me just say that again. Between the ages of 12 and 18 to participate in the annual Hunger Games, a fight to the death on live television. 16-year-old Katniss Everdeen regards it as a death sentence when she steps forward to take her sister's place in the games. But Katniss has been close to death before, and survival for her is second nature. Still, if she is to win, she will have to start making choices that weigh survival against humanity and life against love. If you haven't read this book, do it. It is so compelling. And also, I've talked about this at length in the retrospective, horrifying as a concept. And I don't know that I really realized how horrifying it was until I was an adult, like, man. But it certainly makes you think. And the story is very compelling. The science fiction sort of fantastical setting, the dystopian, it makes for a really compelling read. So The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins, I think, would definitely be something that you would stumble across on like a things you should read list. And again, you read what you want, but this one might be an entertaining one to check out.
I was so excited to see you include The Hunger Games on this because I'm a YA lover. Like there is no shame in my game about that. And I think YA reads need to be incorporated. There needs to be that recognition because it's, you know, again, it's like for everyone, but it's such a digestible way to look at the power of dystopian narratives. And I think of all of the people that I know that were not readers before The Hunger Games that became readers after The Hunger Games because they found their niche. And I think I initially had an N.K. Jemisin title on my list that I didn't read the whole series, so I didn't feel comfortable putting it on. I had only read the first book. But I think it's the same thing that we need to be seeing sci-fi. We need to be seeing this kind of like YA dystopian adventure because it just like shows people that there are more books out there than just what Mr. Darcy's doing. You know, and like, love that for you if that's what you love. I don't mean to like yuck on anyone's yum, but I think it's really impactful to have The Hunger Games on your list. Similarly, I included a graphic novel, Fun Home, A Family Tragicomic by Alison Bechdel. We know I love a graphic memoir. We know I love a graphic novel. I think taking a queer memoir in a graphic novel format and putting it into the canon would also be really impactful. We need to meet readers where they're at. And I think this graphic memoir does exactly that. Alison Bechdel charts her fraught relationship with her late father in Fun Home. Distant and exhilarating, Bruce Bechdel was an English teacher and director of the town funeral home, which Allison and her family referred to as the Fun Home. It was not until college that Allison, who had recently come out as a lesbian, discovered that her father was also gay. A few weeks after this revelation, he was dead, leaving a legacy of mystery for his daughter to resolve. This was also turned into a musical. I think there are so many ways that you can experience Fun Home. And I think that's also just what makes it really empowering. I mean, so again, Fun Home by Alison Bechdel. This one came out in June of 2006. I think bringing graphic novels to people in ways that allow us to see different struggles. I think the canon is definitely missing some queer content in general. So also just having this kind of what does it mean to be from a small town and not come to terms? And, you know, so I think there's lots of great reasons for this to be included. Graphic novel being one, content being two. What do you have next, Emma?
My next one is The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. This book came out in 2000 originally. So it is almost 25 years old at this point. I was fortunate enough that a lot of these books I am talking about, I was actually introduced to in class. So as much as I complained about my assigned reading, I do give huge credit to my teachers and professors and things for sort of expanding the scope and expanding my horizons with these books. And so this was one I was actually taught in high school. And this was the first ever author event I went to, was to see Michael Chabon and get my book signed. So that is sort of where that all began. This follows a young escape artist and budding magician named Joe Cavalier. He arrives on the doorstep of his cousin, Sammy Clay, to kick off the story. Now, with the long shadow of Hitler falling across Europe, America is happily in the golden age of comic books. And in a distant corner of Brooklyn, Sammy is looking for a way to cash in on that craze. He finds the ideal partner in the aloof and artistically gifted Joe, and together they embark on an adventure that takes them deep into the heart of Manhattan and the heart of old-fashioned American ambition. From the shared fears, dreams, and desires of two teenage boys, they spin comic book tales of the heroic fascist-fighting escapist and the beautiful, mysterious Luna Moth, otherworldly mistress of the night. Climbing from the streets of Brooklyn to the top of the Empire State Building, Joe and Sammy carve out lives and careers as vivid as cyan and magenta ink, spanning continents and eras. This superb book by one of America's finest writers remains one of the defining novels of our modern American age. So the description agrees with me, but I just think this was a really interesting, again, in that literary historical vein, but it's also part thriller. There are some tongue-in-cheek elements to it, and who doesn't like comics? So I think that this is definitely a book that could be considered a new classic. So The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, it's Cavalier with a K, by Michael Chabon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
I love it. Who doesn't love comics? And it gets to explore so much too on top of that. Now, my next pick is a new one. It's from 2016, so compared to everything else so far, but this is The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. This follows Cora, who is a slave on a cotton plantation in Georgia. Life is hell for all of the slaves, but especially bad for Cora, an outcast even among her fellow Africans. She is coming into womanhood, where even greater pain awaits. When Caesar, a recent arrival from Virginia, tells her about the Underground Railroad, they decide to take a terrifying risk and escape. Matters do not go as planned. Cora kills a young white boy who tries to capture her. Though they manage to find a station and head north, they are being hunted. So Whitehead takes The Underground Railroad and its no-mere metaphor, where engineers and conductors operate a secret network of tracks and tunnels beneath the southern soil. Cora and Caesar's first stop is in South Carolina, in a city that initially seems like a haven, but the city's placid surface masks an insidious scheme designed for its black denizens. And even worse, Ridgway, the relentless slave catcher, is close on their heels. Forced to flee again, Cora embarks on a harrowing flight, state by state, seeking true freedom. Like the protagonist of Gulliver's Travels, Cora encounters different worlds at each stage of her journey. Hers is an odyssey through time as well as space, as Whitehead brilliantly recreates the unique terrors for Black people in the pre-Civil War era. His narrative seamlessly weaves the saga of the American from the brutal importation of Africans to the unfulfilled promises of the present day. The Underground Railroad is at once a kinetic adventure tale of one woman's ferocious will to escape the horrors of bondage and a shattering, powerful meditation on the history we all share. So again, we've got a bit of magical realism. We've got historical fiction. We're dealing with so much in truly a beautiful book, The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. I absolutely see this being one of the books in the canon. I see this being something that gets taught in classes. And of course, Emma and I, I'll never believe it, but we're old now. Who knows what they're teaching in schools? We're not in the school loop anymore. But there is something about this that I'm like, this absolutely fits in. This is what I see with Beloved. Like, this is another perspective. And I think this tackles so many topics in a digestible way.
Yeah, and this book is hard to put into words. I remember when it came out, and it made such an impact. There have been few books like it in the last decade. So I'm glad you put this on the list. And if you're interested, pro Book Nerds listeners, our PBN predecessors, Adam and Jill, did speak to Colson Whitehead about this book in 2017. So if you want to go all the way back to the archives, we can link that for you as well in show notes, because it is a really interesting conversation that was happening right at the time that he won all the awards.
So many awards. Yeah.
So many awards. I was going to pick one, but it was way more than one. So.
I was like, I won't even bring them up because there are so many.
I'm glad that you have this on the list. I love this list we put together. If I am going to pat ourselves on the back a little bit.
I know. Let's say it. We killed it. This is a killer list. Right. And I think if you read through our classics, you're going to have what you need.
Hopefully. I mean, like, do the kids still say slay? Probably not.
Well, considering I want to say it, definitely not.
Probably not. My shout out to my friend Jocelyn. She does teach middle school students and was telling me some of the slang. And no, I am old. None of it makes sense. And you know,
Ohio is slang.
Yeah,
Skibbity, I don't.
Yeah, none of that computed. But for something that is just as eccentric as the slang that maybe the kids are saying these days, is my next pick. That smooth segue, A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan. This book came out again in 2010, I want to say. This also won a Pulitzer Prize in 2011. So we're keeping that list going. And this book is really hard to describe in too much detail because it's simultaneously related, but it also is told from the perspective of like 13 different stories/chapters. So I do find that it's a really digestible read. So sometimes I feel like I got really daunted by the length of classics, like Anna Karenina is massive, but A Visit from the Goon Squad, I feel like you could easily read in short bursts. And so for a little bit of a synopsis, we have Benny. He's an aging former punk rocker and bigwig record executive. And then Sasha is the passionate, troubled young woman who works for him, his assistant. And in the story, Jennifer Egan just reveals their pasts along with the inner lives of a host of other characters whose paths intersect with theirs. So some have a much more direct connection to these characters and others a lot more cursory. But it's a really, really interesting book. I don't know how else to say it without actually spoiling like the ways in which things are connected. So she did have a sequel to this called The Candy House that came out in 2022. So there's certainly a lot of things to dig into if you find you enjoy A Visit from the Goon Squad. So definitely recommend that one as well.
I'm really glad you included this one. I don't know, something about like the unique form and function, I think, is also something that needs to be challenged sometimes on classics lists. Like the only one that comes to mind that has challenging form is Faulkner.
As I Lay Dying. No. Is that the right one? The other one?
Not Absalom. The Sound and the Fury. I guess we could just Faulkner in general, but My next pick is one that I think may have been co-opted into the classics already. So I hesitated a little bit putting this one on, but I didn't pick like The Kite Runner or truly any of Colette Hosseini's books. I feel like those are being taught a little more. This is The Life of Pi. Same thing that where you see this one, it's had a movie adaptation. I believe there's now a musical or a play adaptation of it as well. This was first published in September of 2001. I think Life of Pi by Yann Martell really fits into the brief of like a classic. And again, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me and my love of magical realism that I yet again pick kind of a magical realism adventure title, but I don't know. Number one, now on Broadway. Number two, international bestseller and modern classic of adventure survival and the power of storytelling. Over 14 million copies sold. Like, so maybe I'm doing a disservice here and I could have picked another one. But if you haven't read Life of Pi yet, here we go. After the sinking of a cargo ship, a solitary lifeboat remains bobbing in the wild blue Pacific. The only survivors from the wreck are a 16-year-old boy named Pi, a hyena, a wounded zebra, an orangutan, and a 450-pound Royal Bengal tiger. Soon, the tiger has dispatched all but Pi Patel, whose fear, knowledge, and cunning allow him to coexist with the tiger, Richard Parker, for 227 days while lost at sea. When they finally reach the coast of Mexico, Richard Parker flees to the jungle, never to be seen again. The Japanese authorities who interrogate Pi refuse to believe his story and press him to tell the truth. After hours of coercion, Pi tells a second story, a story much less fantastical, much more conventional, but is it more true? Life of Pi is at once a realistic, rousing adventure and the meta tale of survival that explores the redemptive power of storytelling and the transformative nature of fiction. It's a story, as one character puts it, to make you believe in God. So that is Life of Pi by Ian Martell. Even if you haven't read it, you've seen the cover. It's the striking, like, boat with boy and tiger. So I don't know. There's just something about this that to me fits in the grand narrative of adventure stories that we tend to see on classics lists. So.
And I think another hallmark of a classic is that there may be more than one adaptation as well.
Yes.
So, which I am going to take for my next two picks as well. You may have seen the movie of either of these. I hope you have. You probably have. But my next pick on this, I think, goes nicely alongside Joe's, and that is The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. This came out in 2017 and follows 16-year-old Star Carter. She moves between two worlds, the poor neighborhood where she lives and the fancy suburban prep school she attends. The uneasy balance between these worlds is shattered when Star witnesses the fatal shooting of her childhood best friend, Khalil, at the hands of a police officer. Khalil was unarmed. Soon afterward, his death is a national headline. Some are calling him a thug, maybe even a drug dealer and a gangbanger. Protesters are taking to the streets in his name. Some cops and a local drug lord try to intimidate Star and her family. What everyone wants to know is what really went down that night. And the only person alive who can answer that is Star. But what Star does or does not say could upend her community. It could also endanger her life. So this story was inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement, and I think tells a story that we have unfortunately seen far too often in headlines. And I think these stories that we're seeing need to be included in these things that were, you know, in discussions or in any sort of list of classics. It's incredibly unfortunate to me that these are experiences people may relate to, where they're fearing for their life or their family's lives, or they've had to witness horrible things that they don't have any control over. And so I think what's important, again, about the power of books is that they can, again, just show you something that you would otherwise have no knowledge of and can then have empathy for and understanding for. So this book I would absolutely recommend as a modern classic. That's The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas.
Absolutely a modern classic. It is, like you said, I could not say it better. The perspective of people living differently than you are. I mean, I could never relate, and reading this book was such a powerful way for me to understand the fear that I don't have in certain situations. So I think this is such an impactful book. Absolutely needs to be picked up and read. And to your point, this has a marker in our timeline. This mm-hmm. This shows, you know, in ways that some of the other classics we mentioned show what it was like for women to be published, or what it was like for this kind of story to be told, or what was happening in the world as a whole. I think this fits that, where we see what was happening in our world in the late 2010s.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Such an important pick. And I think goes well with my next book. Oops. Again, I have picked a magical realism title. So sorry, y'all. I don't even think I connected the dots. I think my hardest pick here was which of Jesmyn Ward's books I was going to put on this list for the canon. But I think in the same way you could pick up any of her books, in the same way that you can with Toni Morrison, that you do not just have to stick to Beloved. You can pick up any of her books and you are getting the beauty and the perspective that is her writing. Same thing for Jesmyn Ward. This is Sing Unburied. Sing. This came out in September of 2017. Another one where I could list forever all of the different accolades and prizes that it has won. This follows Jojo, 13 years old, trying to understand what it means to be a man. He doesn't lack in fathers to study. Chief among them is his black grandfather, Pop. But there are other men who complicate his understanding. His absent white father, Michael, who is being released from prison. His absent white grandfather, Big Joseph, who won't acknowledge his existence. And the memories of his dead uncle, Given, who died as a teenager. His mother, Leonie, is an inconsistent presence in his and his toddler sister's lives. She is an imperfect mother in constant conflict with herself and those around her. She is black and her children's father is white. She wants to be a better mother but can't put her children above her own needs, especially her drug use. Simultaneously tormented and comforted by visions of her dead brother, which only come to her when she's high, Leonie is embattled in ways that reflect the brutal reality of her circumstances. When the children's father is released from prison, Leonie packs her kids and a friend into her car and drives north to the heart of Mississippi and Parcham Farm, the state penitentiary. At Parchman, there is another 13-year-old boy, the ghost of a dead inmate, who carries all of the ugly history of the South with him in his wandering. He, too, has something to teach Jojo about fathers and sons, about legacies, about violence, about love. Rich with Ward's distinctive lyrical language, Sing Unburied Sing is a majestic and unforgettable family story and an odyssey through rural Mississippi, past and present. And that is a quote from the Philadelphia Inquirer. But this is Sing Unburied Sing by Jesmyn Ward. I think it fits really well with your pick as well, with The Hate U Give, looking at different circumstances, much how The Hate U Give looks at the Black Lives Matter movement. This also this book takes a look at the opioid crisis in our world today. So I think we've just got a lot to look at and another way to kind of mark where we were in time when this book was written.
Speaking of marking time when this book was written, my last pick, I feel like, was a moment. If you remember the moment in 2012, and that's Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn. Let me have this pick because I do think we should, again, have more genre books counted in sort of the classic canon. It's because a lot of good stuff happens in mysteries and thrillers, y'all, as we talk about often.
I'm going to support you 1,000% because, as we were saying with some earliers, this counts as a foundational work for books that we're seeing today. There are so many books that write in a similar Gone Girl twist, movies, TV.
Yeah.
You're going to get no argument for me on including Gone Girl.
And even in publishing, I remember when this came out and then the immediate avalanche of books that followed that were, one, hailed as like Gone Girl, and two, had girl in the title. There was a whole wave of books that were something girl or girl in something, the girl on the train, etc. So I think what this book did and does was really interesting. And for those of you that are not aware of the plot, I'll give you a little something. This was also made into a movie in 2014 with Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike. Who are you? What have we done to each other? These are the questions Nick Dunn finds himself asking on the morning of his fifth wedding anniversary when his wife Amy suddenly disappears. The police suspect Nick. Amy's friends reveal that she was afraid of him, that she kept secrets from him. He swears it isn't true. A police examination of his computer shows strange searches. He says they weren't made by him. And then there are the persistent calls on his mobile phone. So what did happen to Nick's beautiful wife? Dun, dun, dun. What happens to her? I mean, if your wife goes missing and all signs point to the spouse, what an interesting investigation. So I without spoiling this book, because I don't want to, because that's part of the joy in reading it, is discovering all of the things within. I remember specifically when this came out, reading it in like one or two sittings, and then getting to certain parts in the book where I had not experienced those types of twists, reveals, what have you, up until that point. Granted, I was still in 2012, dating myself here, in my academic era. So I wasn't doing a ton of reading just for fun, but this was one of the books I picked up. And this was something that, prior to getting really full tilt into my adult like mystery phase, this was one of the ones that was hard to beat for a long time in terms of what it did to the characters, what it did for the plot, what it did for those twists and those things that you're looking for in a mystery. So if you haven't read Gone Girl, it is referenced often for a reason. I would hesitate to say it's like the end all be all of thrillers, but it is, as Joe said, a thriller that has impacted thrillers since and still. So if you haven't read Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn, I would highly, highly recommend.
Absolutely needs to be on here because of the pop culture references, because of everything that has come after this.
Yeah.
And it's also so hard to think of, like, there was a time before you and I were thriller readers that our lists didn't always have a mystery thriller on them, but yeah. This is of the time from before then, but this was on everyone's list. And if you haven't read it, you need to. Like, this to me feels like, if we're using the canon to either show other perspectives in life or build a strong foundation of things, this absolutely ticks that box. My last pick is from March of 2015. This is A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. I think many of Hanya's books could be on these lists, but this is a contemporary literary fiction that dives into mental health. We've got queer coverage here. We are following four classmates from a small Massachusetts college as they move to New York to make their way. They're broke, adrift, and buoyed only by their friendship and ambition. There is kind, handsome Willem, an aspiring actor, JB, a quick-witted, sometimes cruel Brooklyn-born painter seeking entry into the art world, Malcolm, a frustrated architect and at a prominent firm, and withdrawn, brilliant, enigmatic Jude, who serves as their center of gravity. Over the decades, their relationships deepen and darken, tinged by addiction, success, and pride. Yet their greatest challenge, each comes to realize, is Jude himself. By midlife, a terrifyingly talented litigator, yet an increasingly broken man, his mind and body scarred by an unspeakable childhood and haunted by what he fears is a degree of trauma that he'll not only be unable to overcome, but that will define his life forever. Again, we could have so many lists of what these were finalists and prize winners of. But this book, as I think many of these on our lists, have some warnings that go with them that, like, definitely read the description. There is some content warnings for all of these, for just about every book on this list. I think this has an interesting look at multi-POV, different life stories. And again, like, I think in all classics, you tend to find, like, what's the slice of life? What is the metropolis center that we're going for? And I think setting something going from small town Massachusetts to New York And seeing how the power of New York impacts this friend group, I think it's important to have like groups of friends as a setting. So it would not surprise me to see A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara on a canon list.
Wouldn't surprise me either. But that is a book I purposefully have not read because I don't feel mentally strong enough to read it yet.
And I support that. I mean,
eventually,
a National Book Award finalist. Again, as I said, we could go through all of these books and they all have, you know, name after name. But I mean, even just looking at To Paradise from 2022. Yeah, you've got heartbreak. You've got just pain. And so you really do kind of have to watch out for that book. But Emma, pick it up, read it. But you have to be ready for some like emotional damage.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, I have not, as you know, a mood reader, been, I feel like, in the mood for that type of emotional damage. So I haven't picked it up yet.
And this is where you and I, like, the puzzle is really all coming together with our shared literature trauma from education.
Yeah.
It makes sense why you and I are truly such mood readers at this point and why there are some amazing books out there that we just haven't picked up yet, because it is hard to dive into certain things after.
Yeah, after. Right. I mean, after a long time of being told good or bad what to read. Yeah. Yeah.
I think of a lot of books on my shelves that I had to read. And no matter how much I enjoyed them, that today I don't know if I could easily pick up. We've snuck it in throughout here that like literary fiction, when I see it, usually scares me as a genre, just because we had to read so much of it. And now maybe I'll sneak my way back in. But yeah, A Little Life, Hanya Yanagihara. And that brings us to the end of our lists of what we think the new classics are. There are already so many classics out there. I wanted us to keep it brief with just a handful of titles. Because again, you should read what you want to read. And you're already coming to us for recommendations that fit your other tastes. If you want some challenges, some of these books may fit right up your street. Thank you all so much for joining us today for this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast, where we dove into some new classics as told by Emma and I. If you like this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you do your listening. Follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds. And of course, you can send an email to professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com with questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes. Thank you all so much for joining us today, and happy reading!
Happy reading!
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com or in Libby. Our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer and Joe Skelly, and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.